So I really appreciated you being here to listen about lay down your guns. And I guess a great beautiful. And he came out with this title, and he's the writer of the book. And I really, really appreciate the fact that, oh, he's going again. Bye. I really appreciate that he started the book by saying, this is not a story of a person with a halo walking in their heads. And this is not a book of a saint, you know, but it's a book of some of the explaining some of the realities of what happened in life, in real life, what happened in the other places that may not be around the corner of our house. But there are some versions that, I mean, it can interlap. The title of the book came out of a specific conflict or situation that we have in the place where I work. The book is not written, it's not about the story of the organization that I work with, that is named ProDesign, but since I have been there for 27 or 28, I don't want you to start making numbers. So it's kind of hard to separate both of them. Some of the stories that happened had to do with my personal life, with my personal journey with God, but also with my personal work in the mission field. And many of you have been in Honduras. I see so many wonderful faces who have been in the Wild West of Honduras. And that is a place where I went 20-some years ago, a place where I did not want to go by myself, where I didn't have plans to go. I was a young physician, recent to graduate and being successful in my career. And one way or another one, God just led me to go to Olancho. And some people like Dirk, who has been in Olancho many times, know that when you talk about Olancho in Honduras, you talk about guns and machetes and macho men, you know. And I was single and not exactly thinking that I was going to find my charming prince in Olancho. And Robert and Doris Clark, missionaries from Atlanta, he was a physician, a pediatrician, and she was a teacher, an educator. They had talked with somebody who was worked with a Bible school training preachers in Olancho. And what they were doing was they were training those preachers to be a spiritual leaders and chaplains and evangelists in the mountains. And then when they did some kind of evaluation, they found that there was so much poverty, there were so much illnesses, and they wanted to do more than just preach. And it's like what you find in the Bible, that Paul is saying, you know, goodbye, my friend, you know, get warm. And it's a lot easier sometimes just get on your knees and pray when you're in your nice home than just go out there in a mule and go. So that's what they invited me to do. And it took God some pushing and kicking to get me out of the big city and go to Olancho. So this is some of the stories that Greg Taylor wrote about my growing up and fighting and struggling and experiencing God's mercy in my life and experiencing the seed of the Word of God that was planted in my life by my parents. My father was a preacher, and my mom was a, she was one of the leaders in the Catholic Church when she was younger, before she became a Protestant or evangelical Christian. I went to a Catholic school, an elementary school, and a high school. And one of my favorite things to do, which I think is in the book too, was to go and have a challenging discussions with the priests and the nuns about the Virgin Mary and why priests don't get married and all that kind of stuff. But later on, I think that led to me to go to places where there was a real need, And this was something that I had not experienced particularly in my early life. But going to Olancho and seeing Dr. Clark and Doris Clark, his wife, struggling and leaving their comfort, leaving their comfort life to go and help others, that was something that really inspired me. And I think that is something that we all are able to do, whatever we are, whatever we live. We do have a mission field around us. Back to Honduras. Honduras is a... by the way, do you all know where Honduras is? There was a little boy one day that I was doing a presentation, and he said, is Honduras by Iraq, where all that stuff is going on? So after that, I used to carry a map, you know, to say, this is where Honduras is. Honduras is one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere, but by statistics now, you know, when you compare with Africa and when you compare with other countries, it's not as poor as you will expect. Even being in Honduras and working with public health, you know, when you talk about Olancho and San Pedro Sula and Tegucigalpa, the government will say, well, this is not a place where the level of incomes or the basic needs not being met, so it doesn't qualify for all this government grants or stuff. But let me tell you, I have been in places in Olancho where we have families who are having 8 kids waiting to be fed. And sometimes I have gone and take the lid of the pot there, and it's boiling water. Where people really, really have not much materially, but also spiritually. So I think that's where missions like Predesan and people like you who have been involved with our work can really make a difference. We are running 6 clinics and they're just way, way up in the mountains. And one of the things that's also written in the book is a new program that emerged out of a situation. You know, Honduras is in Central America, so the South is here, Central America is here, and the North is here. So the South cultivate and produce the drugs. They just pass by to go to the North to be consumed. So we get the one of the worst part of the business. And, you know, we have become a global village. And it's interesting, you know, that for some countries, you know, with a higher level of income, drug use is a public health problem. You know, it's a health. It's within the health context. When you go to the South, the drug problem is it's a matter of income, you know, survival economically for the country. When you go to the Central America, and then you have the drug problem becomes a matter of life and death. We have had so much violence and so much injustice and unfairness and things that shouldn't have been happening because of that. And that's what I think, you know, we're a global village and we're all responsible in front of God to deal with issues like this that at the end, at the bottom line, you know, they have to do with sin. They have to do with what is that emptiness that we have in our heart? And what are we filling it with? Drug is one of them. But as you know, there are many other things that we can use for that. So we have a program now that it's called a conflict transformation. And you know, it used to be conflict resolution, and Dr. Lori was here right now, and you know, we've been talking about, you know, what do you do with conflict transformation. But there's one of the stories in the book when Greg Taylor was visiting us was a group of people that are using drugs, I mean, the narco, the big guys, you know, they decided that the places where we are at are just really hidden, you know, there's no law there, it's just really far away, so there's not much people seeing what goes on there. And we are near where the Pawtucket River is, which is a huge river, but it kind of goes in the frontier between Nicaragua and Honduras. But you can also go to Mosquito Coast, and from there you can go to Bay Islands, and from Bay Islands you can go to Miami, and then you can go to all the United States. So they basically just took over some of these areas. And it is very hard when you're competing with somebody. You know, we're trying to teach people how to raise crops, you know, how to better farm, and how with the new techniques you are going to make 50,000 lambs a year instead of 10. But when you have somebody coming and saying, you pass this package from point A to point B, you're going to get 50,000 lambs in an hour. That is really hard to beat. We have had the experience of several other organizations just getting out of the area, just basically getting out. We have been really blessed, and I just really appreciate it. I know that there's some people here from churches that have been supporting us for 20-some years. There was a time when this problem happened. There were the people who are doing the narco, the drugs, the big drug dealers, you know, they use the people in the community. So they develop a group of leaders in the community. And then you ended up having one group here and one group there, and then they start fighting for the territory, for who gets more, and they start fighting. And one of the stories in the book is one of the things that have made me to reflect most in life, who we are as far as human beings and what is our biggest need. Having been in Olancho for almost 30 years, you know, we have known generations, and I think that's one of the blessings of having been there for so many years. There's one group here fighting, there's another group here fighting, and sometimes they're family, and then some of them are related to some of our staff. And one good day, un buen día, as we say, we have a camp in one of the villages near our clinics. And we hear that there's things going in the mountains, you know, but it's so amazing how we are in Caracamas, the city, the kind of the second city in the state. And we hear that something going on in the mountains, and we have a radio system, and we have like a camp there. And I talk with Don Albino, you know, Don Albino is the guy who takes care of our camping area there where we take groups and stuff. And I say, Don Albino, how are things there? What's going on? And he said, oh, we just have some friends visiting us here. And I was like, okay. Usually know who is there, you know. I said, are you sure? What's going on? And I heard that some strange things happening there. I said, oh, you know, we at present here, we only have friends here. You know, we help whoever comes here, da 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 da. And we have a code, you know, that we, how we communicate. So I start telling him, okay, well, have you seen so-and-so? You know, because, I mean, I know a lot of the people there. Do you know so-and-so? And say, oh, yeah, yeah, he's a good friend, you know. And then I mention the name of the other. Do you know so-and-so? Oh, yeah, he's also a great friend. And, well, just tell them hi and tell them that, you know, we're there to help, and whoever, if there is anybody injured, you know, we're going to treat them, you know. Make sure they respect present property and that they know that, you know, our staff is there, da 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 da. And he's just telling me, you know, they're just visiting, they're just friends visiting here. And we knew that there was something really hard. We have this experience when we have this camp here. And then at the other side, when you go to just kind of go to the river, we have another clinic, you know, that has a radio and has a generator and all that stuff. And one group wanted to camp out in this side, and the other group wanted to camp out in the other side, in our clinics. Well, you know, I felt like that was just really not appropriate. So we got to the right context. I think God really was working there, you know, because some of the people in the villages called me and they said, you know, things are really hard, people are leaving. Some of the narco people, you know, have equipped people and they're just throwing grenades to their houses and stuff. And I keep calling, you know, who's the right person to call? And I called this police officer that I trust, and he says, I am in Comayagua, and you know where Comayagua is, just at the other side, the north coast. And I cannot get out of here unless somebody big will just put a word for me to get out of here, because I didn't trust the other people near Caracamas. And it was just a God thing. The U.S. ambassador was visiting Caracamas that day. And one of the things she was doing was visiting with a U.S. citizen that live in the area. And the meeting was a close meeting just with the North Americans. And it was kind of in a hotel near my house. And I just pray and say, God, just show me where we can find help for the people in our villages. And then I thought, well, maybe U.S. ambassador will do something. And then I went to the hotel, and then they said, well, it's only for U.S. citizens. And I said, well, you know, I receive between 300 and 400 U.S. visitors every year, and my son is married to an American, my youngest daughter is married to an American, and my oldest daughter is about to marry an American, so I think I qualify. And then I said, plus this is a security issue. So he let me talk with her. And I mean, let me tell you, your U.S. ambassador in Honduras, you know, she is doing a great, great job. Lisa Kubisky is her name, and if you ever want to send her a note, just do it. I talked with her, and I explained what happened, and she just kind of got in her cell phone. It was just so nice, and she said, okay, just write down exactly what it is and what you need. And she sent it to the biggest guy in the country, and in 10 minutes, you know, my friend called me, and he says, I'm on my way. They're giving me a helicopter, and I'm going there. You know, so I said, okay, I'm ahead of you. So Frank Lopez, you know, one of our leaders in the community, who is originally from the community, and this is a parenthesis, but I tell him that he's one of my heroes because he started working with us when he was already like 18, but he had not finished elementary school. So he finished elementary school, he was a community health care worker, then he became an auxiliary nurse, and now he's an RN, he's a professional nurse, and he's the one in charge of the health in those communities. So I say, Frank, would you go with me to the mountains? So Frank and I and somebody else, you know, we went to the villages, and it was just isolation everywhere. Everybody's hiding, everybody's just not wanting to come out. And finally we got there, and we had those two groups of people, you know, that I've never seen in my life a thing like that in Honduras. I mean, I didn't expect it that was happening in my country. It was between 80 and 100 men, you know, and there were camels and weapons and all kind of stuff. Like, they were going to go to war. So it took us forever, you know, to find the main leader and go to a negotiation, and I had to learn conflict resolution negotiation on the way, and we were able to work with one of the groups here and with the other group there, and to make the story short, we ended up having them to compromise and to write down, you know, what they were fighting for, and bottom line was that some of the people, some of the narco people, were trying to buy land because if they buy the best land there, they can have access through without any problems, you know, to whatever they want to go. And, you know, when they want to do that, you know, they have the families, the local people fighting against each other so they can have more power, you know, when people are not united. So this was a great experience, you know, to have the ambassador to make an influence to get the police in a better situation, to make some significant changes there. And we were able to minister to some of those men, to some of those people who You will never find them in a church. One of our chaplains, Julio, and one of our psychologists that work at CEREPA, were able with me to give counseling to some of those guys. And it is just really amazing. You know, Dr. Lori was saying that they have a prison ministry, and the students keep saying, you know, they're not that different than us. You know, when I talk with those guys, you know, they have had their father killed, their sons killed, and they were just really people that are hurting, people who have pain in their lives, people who have had lack of opportunities. I remember when we were talking with them, you know, one of the guys told me when I said, we're here because we care, we're here because we want to help you, and he says, and I had two preachers from the villages with me, and one of the main guys, you know, he was with that hat, you know, the covered face, and he says, your prayers and your church don't do any good to me. My son and my father were still killed, and your prayers didn't help. And, I mean, really, that statement stayed in my heart because I was thinking, well, I mean, I'm not going to be manipulated by a statement of somebody, but at the same time, you have to listen. And I said, you know, I agree. Maybe we have not done enough, but that is the reason why we are here, because we do care. We do not want you to be killed, and all the blood that you shed here is not going to bring your relatives back. But you can do something different with your life. And it is much better now. People have come back to their villages. It was really sad, you know, some of the patients that I had, you know, with diabetes and stuff, they had gone to the boonies, you know, so we had to go and search for the people to come back to their houses. And the professors came back, and the schools were reopened, and our clinics reopened. And some of the people who were involved in criminal or violence activities, some of them were gone, few were killed. But we have two of those guys now that are in jail. And one of them, his name is Ronnie, and I'll ask you to pray for him. He's a cousin of Frank, the leader that I did mention. Really, I mean, a guy with great potential. He used to be in the army, and then he was a guard of one of the presidents. Then he got involved in all this with family. And thanks God, he had not been killed. You know, he had been ambushed like 7 or 8 times. And right now, he's in jail. He's been in jail for almost a year. And I go and see him regularly. He's become a Christian. And you never know. Human's heart, only God knows. But, I mean, he texts me whenever he can. And he is really trying. He's really pursuing to change his life. And he really, I mean, he told me he really believes that God saved him from being killed because God has a plan for him in his life. So it's much better, as I mentioned before. Honduras is in a better situation now. We just had elections last year. We have a new president. One thing that is great that is happening is that the civil society, I mean, you Honduran citizens, are participating more, kind of watching what the government is doing. And I don't expect that things are going to change from morning to afternoon, but I think good steps are being taken. We have an organization that is called Confraternidad Evangelica de Honduras. It's a Christian fraternity society, you know, where more than 10,000 churches and Christian nonprofit organizations are together, and it really, really has made an impact. We are part of that national board. We started as a part of the regional board for Olancho, and now we're part of the national board, and I think with all the Christian community praying, but not also praying, but being very proactive in decisions in the country, promoting some incidents and what decisions are being made, I think differences are being made, changes are happening for the good, and I just want to thank you all and your churches, whoever of you who has participated in the mission of Predesign. One thing that is happening recently that is a really great thing, and I'm just praying and ask you to pray for this vision. We have been working with the government, running those clinics in the mountains because nobody else will do it. And if we're not there, there is about 17,000 people there that don't have any access to medical care. They do evaluations, quarterly evaluations, and then, you know, they have given us a little bit of funding, I mean, a percentage, and then they provide immunizations and some training for staff. So we have a really good partnership with challenges, you know, but one good thing that happened last year, when they did the last evaluation, you know, they evaluate you with the indicators for health, for administration, for finances, for everything. And the three evaluations that we had during the year, we got 100% of everything. And, you know, Frank is the leader of that program, you know, so he was just really excited, and all the people in the field, all the people in the community who have been involved. And when we were having the last evaluation at the end of the year, there was a group that was visiting us, and there was somebody who spoke Spanish, and we are in the conference room there with them working the evaluation. And then in the waiting area where we see patients at the clinic, with some clinic, they were having a devotional. You know, so they were singing and praying. And then these two ladies with the gentlemen who were doing the evaluation, you know, they said they wanted some time alone. So they dismissed us and they just kind of keep talking. Before they gave us the final grade, you know, after they add everything. So when we came back, you know, they started giving us all the information. And one of the ladies says, because there are 36 organizations that are working with this program, they call decentralization, where they are trying to partner with other organizations about giving a better health for the people, better health care. And they say, the lady says, Predesign has been, since the beginning, within the first five historias, that's what they call organizations. You have been the five in the top doing a really good job. And she said, I have been in the 36 places. Now I have no doubts that Predesign is number one. And she said, and now I know why. She said, now I know why. It's because you're Christians. And they were coming from the mountains to evaluate the clinics in the villages. And they said, we have seen the same attitude from the community healthcare workers and the nurses and to the top. And I think it's because you love God. And we have our slogan is, we love God and we love people. Amamos a Dios y le amamos a usted. That's our slogan for everything. And I don't say this just to be prideful or, you know, but I think everything that we do, we want the honor and the glory to be for God. And I want to share this to you so that you can think about what do you have around you? What is your mission field in your home or around the corner of your house? Or in your work? Or is God calling you to go somewhere else? People need God. We all do. We all do. But I think there are some that don't have as much opportunities as we do. And I think missions like Predesign and many others, I know Dirk has worked in Russia, and some other ones work in Africa, and Mission Network, you know. It's just so many things to do. So I want to thank God for your life and for your support and for reading the book. Just have fun reading it and write or something. It's Lay Down Your Guns. I came from that mediation conflict where I have to tell the guys, lay down your guns, you may shoot me, you're pointing at me. You may make a mistake, you know, so I don't want you to be pointing at me, just put it down. This was in one of the occasions that Greg was there, and I was doing some negotiation with them, because we had, when all this stuff was going on, there was a girl that was bitten by a snake, a five-year-old, and she died because she was not able to get out as soon as she could. And then there was a pregnant woman who was in delivery, and she also died because they had a curfew. After 4 o'clock, nobody could get out of the village. So one of the strategies that we did use was to have an evacuation emergency committee, and one of my jobs was to go and talk with everyone who had weapons for whatever reasons. So I went one by one and explaining, you know, what we did, and we pick a person from the village who has a car. We gave them some seed money, and we asked for permission to the police to have one of those lights in their car, and we put banners and jackets so that the cars will be recognized, because we couldn't afford to have one police and a car and driver there full time. But people in the community could do it if they felt safe. So I went and talked with everyone, you know, from the little one that is stealing and extortion and to the big cartel guy. And my message to them was basically, you know, if this girl and this lady were not able to get out and get the appropriate care, it's the same as if they were just gunshot. So we want to make sure that you will let those people out and that you won't touch, and I had to promise them. And that's what credibility also has a lot to do, you know, because all of them were like, we're not going to give a ride to so-and-so. You're not going to give a ride to so-and-so, you know, whoever their enemies are. So that has been something very important, you know, just to make sure to say, we're here to help. And if you are injured, we'll help you. And if someone is injured, we will help them too. But we're not going to get into any business of hiding or taking sides or anything. So when I went to talk with one of the biggest guys, the cartels, he lives in Caracamas, and I had to go like five times to try to get an appointment with him. And finally, you know, he was able to talk with me. And within the conversation, you know, he was talking about those other guys who have killed some of his people. And he says, I don't know them physically. You know, he was talking about a particular person. Diego is his name in the book. We changed his name. And he said, I don't know him. Do you know him? He said, oh, yeah, I know him. I knew him since he was a little boy. And he said, are you afraid he may kill you? I said, well, you know, I mean, who knows, you know? I said, I'm not looking for anybody to shoot me. I love my life, and I'm not being stupid, you know. I mean, I take chances, but very calculated, and if it's worth the risk. But I say, but, you know, if I die, even from a gunshot or a malaria or whatever, I know where I'm going. I'm going to the same place. It doesn't matter how I die. And so he said, are you really sure that you're going to go somewhere after you die? I said, oh, I bet you. So I start talking with him, you know. And he's like, Well, you know, I'm afraid they may kill me if they can, but I'm not going to let them. And I said, well, you know, you may die, but if you didn't change your life, you know, if you don't have God in your heart, it doesn't matter how you die. You know, it's the place where you're going to go after that. So that was just kind of another opportunity to witness to somebody that you normally wouldn't get into the church. So just a reminder again that we are all in need of mercy and love, and especially the Word of God. We also have the book now as an audiobook. Greg Taylor just recently came out with a CD. We're going to be signing books on Friday. I think it's going to be, well, it's probably going to be in the it's in the program there. I don't remember exactly where it's going to be. But we're going to be signing books. The books is in the bookstore, too. All the proceeds go to Predesign. Of course, the publisher gets whatever they have to get. But it's a way to help Predesign and to raise some visibility and have some fun reading and maybe hopefully some inspiration. But what I was going to say is with the government people, they invited us to work on another community. And for those who have been there, it's more like east where we are at right now. It's another municipality. Kulmi is the name. That's the village from where Emelina is from. You know, the Por los Niños is a children's home there. And the girl that is my assistant, you know, she grew up there, and she's originally from Kulmi. And they have 17 clinics that are closed. And 17 clinics, 15 are similar to ours right now, with an auxiliary nurse. One is what they call a Sesamo, that has a higher level of care with physicians and nurses. And one is a birthing center, having a woman to deliver babies there. So please keep that up in your prayers. The government is offering a percentage of the direct cost. They have never, almost never pay on time. So you have to take, it's government, you know. But to me, it's a great opportunity. We would be serving over 25,000 people. And as a different from the U.S., there is a great opportunity to witness. We're looking for funding to fund three chaplains for that particular community before we start, so that we can have the integration of seeing people in a holistic way with physical needs, social needs, but also with spiritual needs. We believe that when people really can change the inside, that's when help really comes in. We also have an alcohol and drug rehab center, as many of you know, and we are opening a place in Tegucigalpa, one of the private universities, Christian University in Tegucigalpa, is providing us with a room, with an apartment, where we have already our office. So we're going to start with outpatient care in Tegucigalpa, where we have a group of former patients from Cerepa. There is another place, San Pedro Sula and La Ceiba, and we have people and patients waiting for us to go there and start another outpatient care for now there. So there is so much to do, so many opportunities where we can witness to people, where we can bring God in a very tangible ways to people. So just pray for all those opportunities, and you have an invitation. You want to come and have an adventure. I have a large house, and my oldest daughter, the last one who was staying with me, is getting married May 10. She's in Oklahoma, so I really, really have an empty nest now. So I may just jump out of the nest and find somewhere to go. But if you have any questions or comments, I don't know how much time we have. Let's see.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Project Lazarus?
Are you what?
Project Lazarus.
What about it?
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes. Jay, what? They are in Choluteca.
Yes.
And they have exchanged with us. They have brought some of their people to our facility, especially the physicians, to be trained and kind of see what we're doing. So we really exchange. They also send us patients to Cerepa. Yeah.
So we're sending our church is sending a group of our people, children, teenagers, and adults to that area this summer. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm going to see if maybe they can say hello to you when I came down.
Well, you know, they are in Choluteca, south.
It's
just south, and we're kind of like eastern part of the country.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It'll be like a 3-5 hour drive.
Yeah. And have you ever met Joe Romero, who works in Nicaragua and Honduras? Is that name ring a bell, Joe Romero?
Yes, I know who he is, but I never worked with him. Yes. Thank you.
Other comments, questions? You're a quiet group. Do we have any more time? Okay. You see? I have my Honduran time. 10:30, so we're done. Well, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your support to Predesign, and I hope to see you there.